across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
Wisconsin, good morning. It is 6:06. We have flipped the calendar. We are all done with April. And as JT would tell us, come on, Justin, say it. Say the words.
It's gonna be May.
That sucked. I'm sorry. Someone smash cut it, and I'm sorry. I quit.
It's gonna be May. It's May 1st, people. That's just what we're trying to say. It's a Wednesday morning. A beautiful day to have you here up north, live from Lake Wissota, wherever you're listening, across the Civic Media Radio Network, through the Civic Media app, social media, or by podcast. Nice to have you along here. Our phone number is 855-75-CIVIC. Again, 855-75-CIVIC. We have a lot right from the get-go here. Coming up in our second half hour, Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes, the former Lieutenant Governor, now heads an organization that is designed to connect Wisconsin residents to millions of dollars in solar energy upgrade funds. So he'll join Melissa Baldoff in our weekly climate check. In our second hour, a report from the Wisconsin Department of Public Instruction looks into the severity and causes of the ongoing teacher shortage in an effort to determine what kinds of things can be done to encourage the educators of tomorrow. Melissa Kay will be here for today's history lesson. Todd Alba comes along to tell us what's on his show later this afternoon. Greg Bach is here from Waukesha. We'll touch base with him for a moment. But right now, we're actually going to get right into it with our first guest who's here because he's joining us from over in that Eastern time zone where 7:06 in the morning is a perfectly normal time to be on live radio. It's our friend Kyle Kaminsky, who's been here before from the Michiganja Report, part of our Courier Newsroom Gander outlet, to tell us about the Biden administration announcing yesterday that it was going to change the federal classification of marijuana. Kyle Kaminsky, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Pat. Happy to be here.
Yeah, nice to have you along here. So let's get into what exactly happened. It was a part of a promise that Joe Biden made as a presidential candidate. He has taken some steps over the years, but now we're at the point of changing what's called the classification of it. What exactly did he announce yesterday, and what all does that mean?
So the DEA is moving to reclassify marijuana as a less dangerous drug, essentially. More specifically, bumping it down from a Schedule 1 substance to a Schedule 3 substance. So it's currently in the same category as heroin and LSD, and this change would be putting it into the same bucket as other less dangerous substances like ketamine or some steroids.
Okay, so in doing that, it's something that has been talked about for years, and it always seemed like, I don't know, people were using kid gloves around the issue, politically speaking. But from a medical standpoint, from a scientific standpoint, I mean, this really isn't all that radical, is it?
Well, I mean, this is kind of a huge deal.
From a policy standpoint, I'm just saying, from in terms of what medical professionals would say, is this the same as cocaine? No, it's not,
Yeah, I mean, we've seen this coming ever since the Biden administration first recommended these changes in October 2022, I think it was. I mean, since then, we've seen kind of continued chipping away on this front, pardoning thousands of people who have been convicted of cannabis possession. It's a movement that's trickled down to the state level, with the expungement of criminal records. So, I mean, I think more importantly, this is just a signal that cannabis should not be taken as seriously as clearly much more dangerous drugs that are out there.
Exactly. And now from a state by state level, obviously we've had the pleasure of talking to you about, how Michigan's journey has been in legalizing marijuana use. Every state around us has done it to some degree. And so that's a lot of cash and customers going to Michigan, to Illinois, now to Minnesota as well. This announcement yesterday, it doesn't really change things from a state-based legal standpoint, does it?
No, it's not legalizing pot for recreational use nationwide or anything like we enjoy here in Michigan, but it's the biggest federal drug policy change in decades. Of course, in some pockets of the country, or I should say nearly half the states now where weed has been legalized, we already know this, and it's been a huge benefit to our economies. Michigan saw more than $3 billion in cannabis sales last year. We hit another monthly sales record here in March. It's the impact to our economy has just been enormous.
Well, let's remind people about that if they don't recall your past visit. $3 billion in sales. And what kind of a financial benefit are we talking about? Which I know every state handles the revenue differently. It might go to schools, might go to roads, might be to certain things. What happens in Michigan, and what has that revenue impact been like?
Oh, you're making me recall the exact finance.
You don't have to give it exact numbers,
it's roads, education. A lot of it goes back directly to local communities, depending on if they're allowing dispensaries to operate in their community. A lot of tax revenue. I mean, along with record sales, record tax revenue as well.
Mm-hmm.
More importantly, this is translating directly to jobs. Along with those record sales, we're seeing record job growth, 47,000 people now working in the cannabis industry in Michigan. So
wow.
We're just behind California for being the nation's weed capital at this point.
We have heard quite frequently from former State Senate Democratic leader Melissa Agard. And the line that she frequently uses, and it did again yesterday, she said that the most dangerous thing about marijuana in Wisconsin is that it's still illegal, you know, because of the things that are happening, you know, under the cover of, you know, of illegal activity. Compared to what you just said, all of those jobs, those are jobs, those are tax-paying jobs that exist because of that one change that's been made. Does it continue to have popular support in Michigan?
Absolutely. I mean, I think if the sales aren't an indicator enough, I've seen a Gallup poll that says something like 70% of adults want legal marijuana. This is a clear issue with 24 states, I believe, approving recreational, well more than half for medical now. It's a pretty popular idea.
So for terms of legal expungement, like you said in 2022, and again last year, Biden issued proclamations that granted widespread pardons to people who had been federally convicted of simple possession of marijuana. And last week, Vice President Kamala Harris hosted a roundtable event with Kim Kardashian, who works on criminal justice issues. It included four individuals that Biden had recently pardoned for nonviolent drug offenses. And so there seem to be all of these positive indicators. And I think I asked you this last time, but I want to ask it again, that in hindsight, has there been... what would count as a negative that has come up since then, whether it's a number of impaired drivers or some other type of, you know, illegal activity by the distributors? Is there what can any of their critics point to and say, well, this was something we didn't see coming?
You know, I try not to look at this with rose-colored glasses here, but years later, I'm still kind of looking for the sky to fall. A lot of the concerns that we heard when people were debating whether it should be legal, no increase in crime. People aren't smoking and driving off of the roads and causing issues. You let me know what you find out on that front.
No, it was that is pretty much the exact answer you gave us last time. That yeah. That there just hasn't been a substantive downside to this. Certainly not to the extent of, look, if you want to talk about alcohol and drug, you know, drunk driving, that would be a bigger debate today if alcohol had never been legalized, as far as its effect on people, you know, driving and behavior and everything else here. So needless to say, this is going to keep Wisconsin legislators talking on the campaign trail about where they stand on this in one form or another. From a federal standpoint, again, all this does is it puts a publisher, a proposal published in the Federal Register. So now there will be public comments, and then, you know, agencies will review things before a decision becomes final. But do you see this continuing to gain momentum from a federal level? And what I mean especially is this: if for some reason Donald Trump and Republicans were to take control of the White House and Congress next year, do you suspect they might pull back on all this, or would they say, you know, hey, don't get in the way of a popular idea? Has there been any indication of that one way or another from Republicans?
I think if you just look at the track record here, the movement to embrace cannabis, I know during Trump's first term, we just didn't see it. Am I worried that we would lose that momentum if we were to shift administration here? Yeah, absolutely. I think this change that we're seeing with the DEA, most importantly, in my mind anyway, is one step closer to full decriminalization. I mean, with the AG's signature on these recent recommendations, it shows that this is a really important issue for Biden's administration. And I think more importantly, it puts the focus on more dangerous drugs. I mean, think fentanyl. That even if you're not a big stoner like me, I think most folks can get on board with the idea that marijuana should be treated differently than some of the other drugs that are out there.
Oh, and fentanyl continues to be a huge issue politically. You have, you know, Tammy Baldwin, who's been trying to, you know, fight its importation, but then watching, you know, Republicans kill the bipartisan border bill, and yet continue to speak out that there's too much fentanyl pouring into our borders. And so I sense a lot of the attention is going to go there now instead of, you know, legalized marijuana use. So to wrap things up for folks who want to know more about this, again, Courier Newsroom is our owner here at Up North News, and for our Michigan outlet, The Gander. But then now, were you like a co-creator of this separate newsletter called the Michiganja Report, right?
Yep. If you head to the gandernewsroom.com, go to our Michiganja tab. I have a bi-weekly newsletter. Goes out at 4:20 p.m. every other Thursday.
Oh, I see what you did there. Okay.
Fill you in on all you need to know about the cannabis business here in Michigan and beyond.
Okay. Kyle Kaminsky, thanks for starting us off so early here over here in Wisconsin. We appreciate your insight as always. Thanks for doing this on short notice. Hope you have a great day.
You as well.
All right. Thanks so much, Kyle. So there you go. Right off the top, big changes at the federal level. Not a significant change legally at the state level yet, but it's going to provide, you know, certainly the impetus for discussions here over, you know, the coming days of the campaign season and beyond. You know, once folks win in November, they're going to be asked all about this. All right, well, we'll get the show back on track in just a little bit here. I'm just going to pause long enough to tell you again that what's coming up will be a couple of guests in our second hour from the Wisconsin Department of Public Instruction looking into the severity and causes of the ongoing teacher shortage. And in about 15 minutes, we'll be hearing from Melissa Baldoff and former Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes about all the ways that there is money available to help with people, small businesses, large businesses that want to go solar. We're just going to focus on the solar aspect of the money that's available to help your home or business become more energy efficient. That and so much more ahead. So wherever you're listening across Wisconsin on this beautiful Wednesday morning, when you're here, you're up north. Live from Lake Wissota on the Civic Media Radio Network, I'm Pat Kreitlow. Ray Parker Jr. has a birthday today. That's coming up in today's history lesson, 30 short minutes from now. Temperatures around Wisconsin at 6 a.m. look like this. It's 52 here in Chippewa Falls, 53 in Hayward. Park Falls is at 53, Wausau 45, Green Bay 54, La Crosse 53, Wisconsin Rapids at 54 right now, Oshkosh reporting 58 degrees, 59 in Madison, and 61 in Waukesha, where Mr. Greg Bach has been standing by. We couldn't really give the show the start that it needed until now. And so we'll ask him about our discussion on legalizing marijuana use. But first, I want to tell you about a little promotional effort that's happening here on the radio over the next couple of days. The 3rd Congressional District Democratic Primary Forum is going to be tonight at 6:30. At the Student Union Theater at UW La Crosse. It will air starting at 6:30 on WLCX The Eagle in La Crosse, 93.5 The Tap here in the Chippewa Valley, WRCE in Richland Center, and WFHR in Wisconsin Rapids. This is the second of two forums. The second of four forums. The next one is June 16th at UW Platteville, and then the final one, July 12th at Chippewa Valley Technical College in Eau Claire. Meanwhile, on the Republican side of things, the former president, Donald Trump, is returning to Wisconsin, visiting the Waukesha County Expo Center this afternoon. You can hear the Maggie Dawn show later today as she has reporters, a former congressman, and some more of our colleagues covering the event starting at 2 on the Civic Media Radio Network and maybe the Civic Media app as well. Mr. Bach, so we had kind of a discombobulated start to things, but when Kyle was available this early, I thought that that was rather noteworthy, given how much lip service has been paid to the topic of legalizing marijuana in Wisconsin, and yet year after year after year after year, nothing gets done about it. Yeah. Maybe this is the trigger that gets something done this time. I don't know.
I mean, as Kyle said, it's a great start. It's getting the ball rolling. It's, you know, it's ridiculous that it isn't legal, but, you know, the uphill battle, I can only imagine for those. I remember Cory Booker, senator from New Jersey, a couple of years ago, just, he was tired of it. And he's like, I'm putting something in the Senate. I'm legal. I'm going to put something in there, legalize marijuana. And it died. It didn't go anywhere. It was more ceremonial. But yeah, this is a huge step and we need to do it. And I think it's the only way it's going to be legal in Wisconsin. I think Madison's going to wait until it's national so they don't have to take the big step.
Probably. So that was something we were appreciative of Kyle to tell us more about. All right. I've got to talk about the Brewers game because I watched most of it. And I don't normally get this angry about a Brewers game.
His arms are crossed tight. And
maybe you saw the highlights early this morning, the brawl that broke out, both the benches cleared, the bullpen. Look, the game was that the Brewers beat the Tampa Bay Rays 8-2. Overshadowing the game was that brawl that broke out on the field, but you can't talk about the brawl without acknowledging that tensions were high because of an umpire who just had to make the game all about him. And if you're thinking, wait, is this a rerun or something? No. For the third day in a row, the Brewers got jobbed by terrible umpiring. And I have plenty of respect for umpires, referees, line judges, but this current crop of MLB umpires is the worst. The calls that they miss and the way they make things about themselves.
Yeah.
Freddie Peralta was on the mound for the Brewers, starting pitcher, having a good outing. You know, the Brewers were ahead. He did give up a home run to Tampa Bay's Jose Siri back in the third. And when he faced him again in the sixth, the count was 3-0. The next pitch went too far inside and plunked Siri. So the home plate umpire, crew chief Chris Guccione, pauses the game, has a huddle with the other umps, and you're thinking, okay, now they're going to issue warnings to both benches. No. He tosses Peralta. Tosses him. No warning. And certainly nothing that made it evident that this was any kind of an intentional pitch. Pat Murphy rightly loses it because this is the crew that, you know, that jobbed him the day before with a bad call. So just a straight up power trip. So Murphy gets ejected for once again having to tell the umps how to get their calls right. So later on in the game, Siri grounds out to first, and now he and the Brewers' Abner Uribe exchange some words, and the fists start flying, and the bench is empty, and it's just an ugly scene all the way. All of it made completely unnecessary by an umpiring crew that decided to escalate the situation rather than de-escalate it. And while it certainly made for, you know, drama and something to watch, just entirely unnecessary. So that's, I think it might sound, if you didn't see the game, you're like, wow, Pat's really worked up about this. You talk to anybody that watched that game yesterday, I'm betting they're a little worked up about it.
No, I mean, you're right. The calls on the pass, like, it was really frustrating to see that call be, like, missed with Aaron Judge on non-interference.
The interference, right.
And then the next night we get charged with interference. And then this, and I don't know if you've seen it, but there are just a ton of videos, especially focusing on Angel Hernandez, who is another MLB umpire,
he's so who is bad. Just,
I mean, he's, folks, this is not our team getting the work over on this. These are horrible calls, like outside pitches being called as strikes, and he just, no, I don't care. I'm the ump. I get what I want. I do it. I understand the frustration, and I don't like, I personally don't like seeing fights in baseball. I think they're a waste of time. I think they're bad form. I know that tempers can get flared, but from what I read and what you're saying, it just seemed like they sealed the top of the pressure cooker in early in the game and just let it go.
and then shook it up a bit.
And then made fun of its mom. And then
it all blowed up. So go figure. Anyway, the Brewers and Rays, they will wrap up the series today. 12:10 first pitch. So you can catch the pregame starting at 11:35 this morning on News from the Center in Richland Center, WRJN in Racine, Kenosha, Oshkosh Air Support, and 98Q Country in Park Falls. As for the Bucks, I thought we'd be sitting here today saying, well, good run, guys. You know, maybe next year, but they're alive.
Yep.
Even without Giannis.
112-95, wasn't it?
Yep. Dame Lillard. They still managed to beat Indiana 115-92, it says here in Game 5. Now, look, the Pacers still lead the series 3-2. So every game is an elimination game now. Yeah. The Bucks will have to win 3 elimination games if they want to advance. And so the Game 6 will be Thursday, tomorrow, in Indianapolis. And there is not a start time yet on that game. Bobby Portis apologized to his teammates for getting ejected in that Game 4 loss. And then Portis made amends by scoring 29 points, along with Chris Middleton, who, again, I am amazed he is still playing the way that his knee is. I'm expecting his leg to just fall off some point.
This was an impressive game. I know that because Doc Rivers, in his post-game interview, sounded happy. He registered emotions.
We got that going for us finally. So maybe that means something heading into Game 6, and then maybe there'll be a Game 7. We'll see. But tomorrow there will be a Game 6, and you can catch that action starting at 5:30 tomorrow on News from the Center in Richland Center, Lake Air in Amory, 98Q Country in Park Falls, and locally grown radio in Wisconsin Rapids. So there's all of the sports that we've got for you today. Coming up next is going to be our climate check with Melissa Baldoff, who's joined by former Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes to talk about ways that you can upgrade your energy efficiency and get money back or tax credits in the process. We talk all about the teacher shortage in Wisconsin in our second hour. Live from Lake Wasota on the Civic Media Radio Network, I'm Pat Kreitlum. And welcome back to Up North News Radio, where it's time for our weekly climate check with Melissa Baldoff and a special guest this week. Melissa, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Doing well. How are you?
Doing well, thank you. So today's topic is primarily going to be about solar, but it's part of, you know, a push for greener energy all over Wisconsin, of course, the national initiatives and the statewide execution of it. But Melissa, before we get to our guests, let's just speak broadly here about solar and that component in Wisconsin's energy, you know, portfolio. You were with Governor Evers' office, and so surely, you know, you had kind of a front row seat to, you know, the commitment to solar and other renewable energy sources in our state over the coming years.
Yes, absolutely. Governor Evers and Lieutenant Governor Barnes were very committed to expanding clean energy in Wisconsin. And when I was in the administration, and we know that solar is an incredibly inexpensive option when it comes to clean energy. It's clean, it's affordable, it is something that is, you know, easy to harness. It's one of the best ways to lower energy costs for American families. It is able to, you know, lead to reduced air pollution in neighborhoods, lower those utility bills, especially in areas where people have been kind of historically left behind. And it's an area, and we've talked about this with our friends at Renew Wisconsin and others before, it's an area where there's a lot of opportunity when it comes to job growth in Wisconsin and around the country. So this was a really exciting component of what President Biden was able to do through the Inflation Reduction Act was create this Solar for All program, which invested $7 billion, seven with a B, or billion with a B, to go to funds for states, territories, tribal governments, municipalities, and nonprofits to help them develop solar programs that'll enable these communities that have historically been left behind to help them, you know, develop these residential solar programs.
And so, again, the aforementioned Lieutenant Governor Barnes was very instrumental in the first Evers term, heading up the Governor's Task Force on Climate Change. And he's still as involved as ever now with an organization called Forward Together Wisconsin. So to learn more about that, we are joined by Mandela Barnes. Mandela, good morning. Thank you for being here.
Hey, of course. Thanks so much for having me. Good afternoon.
Yeah, to you. Well, it's our pleasure. Hey, tell us about Forward Together Wisconsin. It sounds like a very unique group that you've set up here.
Yeah, very unique group. And, you know, add this to the list of the things I've been up to, but this is one that is particularly important, as they all are, given the fact that I was able to chair the governor's task force on climate change. Now, the frustrating part about it is so many of the recommendations of that task force we're left up to legislative approval. And at this point, we don't have a legislature that seems keen on approving any sort of climate recommendations. But the work is too important for us to just forget about. And one of the things I want to do post-elected life is to be sure that Wisconsin still met our clean energy goals, the clean energy goals that we set while I was in office, having a clean power plan for the very first time. It's going to take some outside help to make that happen. So I started Forward Together Wisconsin as an organization to assist with the implementation of the Inflation Reduction Act. We've taken a multi-pronged approach to this. One, we've been knocking on doors, talking to folks right at their doorstep about the incentives that they qualify for, things they may not have realized or even thought about, ways to improve efficiency in their own homes and how to save money to actually do that. And you run into so many folks who, one, don't know what the Inflation Reduction Act is, two, have zero idea about how it impacts them, and we're trying to close that access gap. And another thing we're doing is a partnership with the with Green Homeowners United. It is our Green Homes Initiative, because you know many of the incentives for the Inflation Reduction Act are on the back end. It takes a lot of upfront investment to make some of the upgrades. And we've been able to help cover the upfront costs for energy assessments and insulation work for a number of homes. And then finally, we're getting ready to kick off our Green Schools Initiative, helping out schools and school districts, connecting them to the resources they may not have been aware of, especially the lower income school districts that may not, or smaller school districts for that matter, that may not have the business officers with the capacity to be able to apply for some of these grants or research funding opportunities. So to put it very plainly, Forward Together Wisconsin operates to make sustainable attainable for folks.
You know, when I hear you describing that, and we heard Jen Gietrich a couple of weeks back from Conservation Voters, and we've talked to people from other groups as well, here's what I'm reminded of. During the Obama administration, coming out of the Great Recession was the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, and all that search for, you know, shovel-ready projects, which, you know, met with some success. In other places, the shovel-ready part of it wasn't necessarily there, and it seems that since then, what the Biden administration has figured out is that it's not enough to just say, here we go, here's an investment. You actually have to, like you said, knock on the doors, do the radio interviews, talk to folks, real end users, about what's out there for them. And that's part of, it sounds like you're one part of that communication effort to, you know, everyday Americans.
Well, of course, people here in Wisconsin have a whole lot to gain from the Inflation Reduction Act. This is a once in a lifetime opportunity. You know, when the task force was created, we assumed that there was going to be no help from the federal government, given the president we had, and given the prior reluctance to make these large scale investments. But now we have this abundance of support and resources. However, we have to make sure that these resources are marshaled effectively and equitably.
Melissa, I want your thoughts on that too, as well as the direct contact to consumers, you know, to voters, to residents, and not just them, but also farmers and small business owners and large business owners. You really, with something this large of an investment, it takes all kinds of folks to facilitate connecting dollars to end users in Wisconsin.
Yeah, it does. It takes a lot of communication. Like you said, we've had folks on talking about, you know, out knocking doors, doing the radio interviews, communicating online, making sure they're talking to their local press, talking to neighbors. And then, you know, another challenge, though, is that some of these investments and these really, really great programs do require an upfront investment from a homeowner from the end user. And for a lot of folks, that is a burden. And that is something that is a challenge. So I know that there are also efforts to, you know, help kind of fill that gap. You know, we know that, you know, more than a third of Americans have less than $100 saved, and half have less than $500. So when you're talking about something that would provide an incredible benefit down the road and thousands of savings over a lifetime, but maybe requires a $2,000 or $3,000 upfront cost, that can be prohibitive, especially in some of these lower income communities. So it's not just about educating folks on, yes, this is available. It's how could this become available to you? How can this be a reality to you? And how can this be something that's not out of reach for you? And I know that there are organizations out there that are helping to do that work and letting people know that you're not going to be left behind. And I think that speaks to what Mandela is talking about, is doing this in a way that is equitable.
Yeah, we're kind of calling back to our discussion a couple of weeks ago about Beloit and the air quality there. And for folks there that, you know, have to, by circumstance, they're living closer to industrial areas and things like that, they are, you know, they are more susceptible to the hazards of a changing climate and less likely to be able to access the resources that would mitigate some of that damage. So Mandela, if you mentioned in the press release that President Biden has a Justice 40 initiative that makes sure that, you know, some of these federal investments flow to some of these other communities. Can you tell us more about that?
Well, absolutely. So there is this commitment from the Biden-Harris administration to make sure that resources flow equitably to communities. But at the same time, you know, we still have to be the, you know, outside arbiters to make sure that it actually happens, right? Like showing up, and it doesn't matter if people don't know that these resources exist or can help them. It doesn't matter if we have a, you know, a school district that would love to participate in some of these programs, but don't have the capacity to be able to, one, invest, or two, make the connections necessary, or three, be able to apply for some of the grant funding. And we've been able to step in a number of instances to help make those connections. We just recent one with Milwaukee Public Schools, and we look forward to many more partnerships to come. But given the fact that we have this Justice 40 initiative layered on top of the work that's already happening, I think that, you know, opportunities are endless, and these are opportunities that I hope everybody can think about or get to a place to even think about to make sure that, you know, we are leading that just transition. And those air quality issues, think about how many children are impacted by air quality. It's Beloit, it's Milwaukee, it's communities all across the state of Wisconsin. And, you know, we do need leadership to step up as well. Everybody's going to have to play a role, whether it's the organizing side of things or whether it's elected officials actually showing some concern for their constituents.
And then finally, the economic boost to it. You note that there are now literally thousands of jobs related to solar energy in Wisconsin, and that this is not just an all-city thing, that rural Wisconsin is benefiting from the jobs. Tell us about that.
Well, absolutely. There just was an announcement with Northwest Side Community Development Corporation in Milwaukee about a new training facility they're getting ready to build. And we want to make sure that that organization is in prime position to take advantage of some of the opportunities that are ahead of us. We have with Green Homeowners United, that partnership in our Green Homes Initiative, we've been able to get folks off the bench. This is a woman-owned union contractor. The laborers perform the work that's being done in these homes. These are folks who were sitting on the bench waiting for their next opportunity. So we're working to get to a place where we can make even larger scale investments to get even more people to work, to provide even more job training opportunities for the work that is to come in the next phase of this.
And then to you know, bring this to where we are this year, which is a very political year. Control of the White House is at stake. Control of the House and the Senate is at stake. So again, from that standpoint of the Wisconsin economy, jobs and household budgets, I mean, how important is it that, you know, people consider everything you just talked about when they decide who's going to be in power for the next 4 years?
Yeah, I mean, this is an incredible opportunity to boost economies, right? Like you think about the amount of money people are spending, especially in the wintertime here in Wisconsin, and how far just insulation work goes to save folks money. And you couple that, the cost savings, with the job creation, this creates, you know, a benefit that doesn't get talked about. And it's one thing that, you know, the right wing always says, this is going to cost us money. How much is this going to cost? Well, this is an opportunity for us to generate resources, to generate revenue, to put money right into hardworking Wisconsinites' pockets, and to also create a new generation of hardworking Wisconsinites.
It does make me wonder, Melissa, if how many more budget cycles it will be before Republicans in the legislature and in Congress are talking more about how they can get on and get some credit for the jobs that are being created, rather than trying to be a roadblock to those jobs that are created. What did we talk? Was it 2 months ago about, you know, the House climate Republican climate caucus and. Mm-hmm. You know, how it just as it was starting to build momentum, you know, Trump comes along and says, well, no, we're going to blow up all these efforts at renewable energy. So, I mean, for conservatives, for Republicans listening to this, there is a fork in the road in terms of the future of the party and where you stand on, not just from a climate standpoint, but from an economic standpoint as well.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's not going to be just like they've been trying to do, all the guys and gals too, who voted against the IRA and then want to, you know, tweet out pictures of the projects in their district saying how great they are. If you want to get the credit for all the good things that are happening, you need to be a part of making it actually happen instead of just trying to get credit on the back end. So I would welcome them to do the right thing and join Democrats in building the, you know, clean energy future.
Without a doubt. And Mandela, I know, I'm just sure you're busy with political matters as well as we get into an election year. So I hope you'll come back and we can talk more about, you know, some of the other activities that you're working on. But thank you so much for telling us more about Forward Together Wisconsin and all of these new opportunities.
Hey, thank you so much. I'm back whenever you want me.
All right. Thanks, Mandela Barnes. Melissa Baldoff, thank you so much. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, take care.
All right, we'll be back with today's history lesson right after this, here up north. Today's history lesson, Judy Collins is 85 years old today, just ubiquitous with, you know, some of the adult contemporary hits of the early 70s, shall we say, but of course with a strong folk background as well. And in fact, Judy Collins' 1970 rendition of the song Amazing Grace was selected for preservation in the National Recording Registry by the Library of Congress as being culturally, historically, or artistically significant. So again, happy birthday to Judy Collins. Melissa Kay from Locally Grown Radio is with us. None of us have been, you know, put in the permanent vault of the Library of Congress, so I guess we got to work a little harder.
I escaped. No cage can keep me!
And there's a movie about this you should watch.
Yes, Melissa, how are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Very good, thanks. Yeah, we got a busy start to the day already. We got a few birthdays to cover. We got to find out what's new in Wisconsin Rapids world. But let's start by wishing another happy birthday out there. A couple of them. We mentioned Ray Parker Jr. She turned 70 today. And singer Rita Coolidge is 79.
Close the window, call the light. Oh, my God. Song.
Now I have to say, this is a nice enough song for its era, but then somebody did what I would consider the worst mashup in the history of you know, the top 40 hits. They combined this with the same version of the song done by Boz Scaggs. And if you ever get a chance to listen to it, don't do it, because it's just It's just so discordant. It just doesn't make any sense. Just listen to Rita. That's or Boz. Either one works out just fine.
Just pick one.
It's Rita versus Boz. Two entertainers enter.
Look, you can like two different things. Sometimes they combine well, like peanut butter and chocolate. Other times, like, you know, peanut butter and asparagus, not so much. You know, you just got to know. So know your lane. On this day.
Peanut butter's versatile.
I'm not knocking it.
Peanut butter sandwich, a dollop, a little dollop in the middle of Nutella as a sweet treat, even though it's already a sweet treat.
Or sriracha.
Oh, get. Mike.
When did we get into food talk over here?
You brought up peanut butter.
On this day in 1956, Johnny Cash released this little song that stuck with him for the rest of his life.
I keep a close watch on this heart of mine. I keep my eyes wide open all the time. I keep the ends out for the tie that binds. Because you're mine. I walk the line.
Now, I walk the line was a pledge of fidelity to his first wife. Then the song became a hit, and Johnny Cash found it a little harder to be true to his first wife and started an affair with June Carter, who he would later marry. So remember, a song's lyrics are only as good as when they are when they're fresh.
There's a really good there's a really good documentary about Vivian Liberto. It's heartbreaking but beautiful.
On this day in 1967, Elvis and Priscilla were married in a private ceremony at the Aladdin Hotel in Las Vegas. Do you suppose they had any Elvis impersonators there?
Probably. And the birth of the Elvis wedding chapels.
Yep. Oh, so many since then.
They can't do it anymore.
No, they can't, can they?
What?
No.
What?
No, the Elvis family said no more. They put the kibosh on it.
Yeah, so you can't do Elvis weddings in Vegas because of legal matters. Now, here's the thing I think is so funny. The thing I think is so funny, and we've talked about this before, that the Trump campaign now says if any other candidates for any offices want to use Trump's image or likeness, they should pay a 5% fee to the Trump campaign.
At least.
Like some kind of a licensing fee.
At least 5% suggested licensing fee.
Yeah, not a kickback, not at all. The number one song this day in 1976 was by the Bellamy Brothers. On this day in 1931, the Empire State Building was dedicated in New York City. In 2003, what became known as the Mission Accomplished speech on board the USS Abraham Lincoln was where President George W. Bush declared that major combat operations in Iraq had ended 6 weeks after the initial invasion. They had not. One more birthday to share. I'm just going to leave it at that. One more birthday to share. Singer Tim McGraw is 57 today.
Wow.
Yeah. What a great concert.
You saw Tim?
I've seen Tim McGraw, yeah. He's.
I did too, and when I was looking at the album cover for this one, Where the Green Grass Grows, and I thought I'd queued it up to him singing, my apologies. But he's just, again, like all of us, he's like, oh, you were so much younger. I saw him like the first year he was on the charts as well. And I just remember it was at Country Jam in Eau Claire. And, you know, some people just impress you right away. And I'm just looking going, this guy's going to go places.
Yeah.
And he absolutely did. So good on him.
Yeah. You know? He's very, 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 very talented.
There are so many things on the national calendar because it's the first of the month. So I don't want to give Melissa short shrift. So, Melissa, you first this time. What's new at locally grown radio? What are folks looking forward to?
Well, you know, it's high school sports season, so we air as many sports games as we can. So baseball is kicking off, I think, and probably softball, too. So lots of high school sports coming up. And the Bucks are still playing. So somehow they're staying alive. Yep. But we've got some exciting news coming up that I can't talk about yet. We're having a meeting today.
Well, when can we find out about it?
Next week, I think.
Do you think? Okay.
We'll announce our announcement next week.
We'll announce our announcement of that thing.
They're
that
announcing.
We can't tell you about.
They're going to announce it's a pre-announcement for the announcement of their announcement.
Exactly.
Yes, that's exactly right.
All right. Well, consider us teased, I guess, on this May 1st, which of course is May Day. It's Frequent Flyer Day. It's School Principals Day, International Doodle Dog Day, Save the Rhino Day, Interpreter Appreciation Day, Skilled Trades Day, Therapeutic Massage Day. And then, of course, it's a month, so it's American Cheese Month. It's ALS Awareness Month, Asian American and Pacific Islander Heritage Month, Maternal Mental Health, Women's Health, Bicycle Safety. It's National Egg Month. It's National Small Business Month, and it's National Hamburger Month. So there's a whole lot of reasons people are having big events or sales or what have you, and that is just a small list of it. Melissa Kay, thanks as always for joining us on Wednesdays. We appreciate it. Can't wait to find out the announcement of the announcement real soon.
Yeah,
me too. She looks so excited about it.
I am so excited.
I love the excitement.
I'm excited by the excitement of the pre-announcement of the announcement.